Maybe you can change like in midstream, just leave briefly. And
I used to wear, when we did these before, I used to wear a different comic book one every time.
Okay.
I guess I've grown up in quarantine.
I remember what a collared shirt felt like.
Yeah, it's like my second one.
Yeah, Derek, you and I lose the collared shirt award. We're out.
No,
five is pretty good, I think. We're just waiting for anyone who's watching. We're just waiting on the all clear from our ace producer here, Bob Rose, and then we'll be up and running.
All clear.
Derek, I'm so nervous. Oh, that backfired. Derek, I was gonna make a Derek Rose joke, but we've got a Derek in our thing.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to a special Best Podcast in Baseball, brought to you by Closet by Design of St. Louis. I'm St. Louis Post-Dispatch baseball writer Derek Gould, and this week, a few of us sports writers from STLtoday.com and the pages of the Post-Dispatch got together for a Sports on Tap at-home edition. That's right, we gathered all on a Zoom from our various offices spread around the St. Louis area, including one in Columbia, and got a chance to talk sports. Ben Fredrickson, sports columnist, hosted, and he was joined by sports columnist Benjamin Hockman, Blues beat writer and longtime football writer Jim Thomas, Mizzou beat writer Dave the Shark Matter, and myself. We all talked about the current landscape of St. Louis sports as it slowly, haltingly returns from the coronavirus crisis, and whether or not there will be games to be played this year, where they'll be played, and of course, what rules they'll be played under. There was baseball talk, Tiger talk, rink talk, some small talk, and I thought I'd bring it all to you here on the Best Podcast in Baseball. You don't have to watch us talk. You can just hear us talk. The Best Podcast in Baseball is brought to you by Closet by Design. Imagine your home totally organized. Closet by Design specializes in custom closets, pantries, laundry rooms, garages, and more. Now get 40% plus an additional 15% off Closets by Design. Call 314-733-9855. That's Closets by Design, 314-733-9855. The official sponsor of the Best Podcast in Baseball. Now, here's Sports on Tap at home.
There is. I wish we had like the Brady Bunch theme music to bring us in here, right? We could be looking down and over and laughing. And...
Well, I think here you go. Everybody do a quick turn to the
there
side.
You go. Attaboy. Attaboy, Ben.
And we're going to get rolling here because we're live and we've got people tuning in. So we've only got about an hour and some change. I imagine we're probably going to go over it knowing how we like to talk. So we'll go ahead and start. But first of all, I want to thank everybody for being a part of our STL Sports on Tap presented by Scotsman Coin and Jewelry. This is obviously an event that we would love to have in person, but we're going to try it out virtually and see where it goes. For those of you who don't know, I'm Ben Fredrickson, a sports columnist at the Post-Dispatch, joined by my colleagues, columnist Benjamin Hockman, Jim Thomas, our Blues beat writer, Dave Matter, our Mizzou beat writer, and of course, Derek Gould, our Cardinals beat writer. And we're here in all of our respective homes, ready to talk some sports. We would love to be doing this in person, but this is kind of cool because we're getting a chance to maybe reach some folks who have not been to one of these in person before. And I think that's neat, hearing from some folks who would love to come to these events but haven't had the chance. So we're able to do it thanks to Scotsman Coin and Jewelry. And they're our presenting sponsor this evening. And wanted to remind folks, you know, a lot of people are doing some cleaning around the house during this quarantine time, some spring/summer cleaning. If you found some things in your home, you know, if you've got old coins, jewelry, watches, and you're thinking it might be worth something, silver flatware, take it to Scotsman Coin and Jewelry in Creekcourt. They'll give you the best price for it. We're going to go ahead and kind of introduce everybody here, and we're going to do that with a question. If you signed up, pre-registered for the event, you submitted a question. Hopefully, we got some really good ones. So I figured instead of us, you know, saying hello, which we've already done, we'll field a question starting off. So Kendrick's Meats is our sponsor of our Cardinals portion this evening. So we're going to start with one for Derek Gould, and this is one that we hear a lot about, Derek. Somebody wanted to know from you, Dylan Carlson, how does the 30-man roster affect his chance of making it? And also, should he make it if the Cardinals do expand a 30-man roster for this shortened 2020 season?
I'll take the last part first and say that if the Cardinals can come up with 30 better players in their organization than Dylan Carlson, then – they're watching a different organization than we are. I would have a hard time getting to 10 without suggesting that he was one of the best 10 players in the organization. I think, you know, the size of the roster is not a big deal to the first part of the question as far as what agreement comes into play as far as service time, where players fit as far as, you know, how this year counts towards the control teams have. All of those things play far more into it than the size of the roster. So, for example, if they play an 82-game schedule and it's considered an 82-game schedule of service time, then he's on it from day one because he wouldn't trigger any of the Super 2 things and they would still control. But if they call it a full season, if you play 82 and you get a full season of service time, which is what they discussed back in March, then you're going to see some sort of changing of when and how he'll be active. But he's going to be involved in this season in some way, whether that's automatically on the active roster or if that's on the taxi squad to then join at some point in time. If the Cardinals play baseball this season, if there's a Major League Baseball season, Dylan Carlson's going to make his debut at some point in it, especially if the Cardinals have any interest or any idea of contending it. He's got to be involved in the sprint.
Fans are going to like to hear that. We'll stick with the Cardinals. These are kind of our opening cuts, if you will, and pitch one to Benjamin Hockman here. Multiple people in their pre-registered questions, Hoxie asked about the universal DH. Is it here to stay? It seems like it's coming in whatever plans are going to happen for the 2020 season. Is it going to stick around? Should it stick around? This is a hot button topic. I'm for it. I think the DH is overdue. What are your thoughts on it?
Look, many of the people watching right now were raised on toasted ravioli and gooey butter cake and call Interstate 64 Highway 40 because we're St. Louisans and we're a National League town. And even if the pitcher looks ridiculous swinging, he should be batting because that's the strategy that we grew up on, that we were raised by. And every once in a while, Bob Gibson or Bob Forrest or Adam Wainwright will hit one out of the park. I don't want the DH, but I think this is going to be a situation and an opportunity, I hate to say, for people from here and people who follow the Cardinals to slowly let it into their world because they'll have it in the 2020 season. And that's what, maybe 82 games, whatever it might be. And I think we're just going to have to start embracing it because it's going to be part of our world, our new, I hate to put them together, but our new post-coronavirus world will include the DH in National League ballparks.
Strategy is going to suffer a little bit, although I like the idea of finding an easier way to get Tommy Edman and Tyler O'Neill some at-bats and creating some room for Lane Thomas and maybe Dylan Carlson we talked about. JT, we're going to go to you. This is the Synergy Chiropractic Center segment. They're going to sponsor our Blues questions and answers tonight. We're going to get a lot into the Blues' chances of defending the Cup, what that could look like. But kind of the Dylan Carlson question, if you will, of the Blues scene right now is with the captain, Alex Pietrangelo. The Blues have put themselves in a spot where he's really the big unknown for this offseason, whenever that offseason comes. What do you think the latest is on where Pietrangelo stands in terms of his extension talks with the Blues, and how could it be changed by this kind of crazy season that could result in less money to go around by the cap next year?
I'm fine, Ben. Thanks for asking. How are you doing? No, it's a question that won't go away, and it's going to be around longer because I don't think anything will happen now until after the season resumes. And it looks very much almost on a daily basis like the NHL will return the play, and there could be hockey in late July, August, and perhaps into September. Doug Armstrong did a very interesting thing about a month ago during this coronavirus, what the league called the coronavirus pause. He started signing players. He wouldn't have done it until the end of the season. He does rarely, I mean, he occasionally will, but rarely will he do an extension in season. He likes to just concentrate on the season. But during the pause, he decided what the heck, and he signed three players to extensions and used up most of their cap space for next year. And the problem is the cap will be flat, perhaps go down next year. Originally, it was intended to go up $3.5 million to maybe about $8 million next year. So right now, somebody will have to go, about $10 million worth of somebody will have to go to make room for Petro. I don't think there's anything going on right now, but that could mean a trade of Jake Allen. There's a chance the league might get something called a compliance buyout, in which they could buy out a player and with better cap ramifications than the normal buyout procedures. But yeah, they don't have enough room for him. Somebody will have to go. Like I said, probably a couple somebodies for him to come back.
I imagine we're going to get into Petro a little bit more later as well. So an appetizer here of some popular topics. Dave, kind of something that you and I have talked a lot about, and this question, our Mizzou questions, are going to be brought to us by Best Home Furnishings. We had a reader named Jim who wanted to know, about college football, what it looks like this season, but also Mizzou football recruiting under Eli Drinkwitz. And he wants to know kind of what do you think the Drinkwitz's strategy is right now in terms of recruiting. Do you see him taking some junior college transfers to help him be ready early on? Do you think he's going to build this up more long-term? And where are they looking besides, just defensive ends right now in terms of his first recruiting class and just that the impact that he's made here to start?
Yeah, defensive line has been a priority. They signed it. They've gotten, if you include the guys they signed in December and February, they've really made an emphasis on just adding some offensive playmakers, whether that's running backs or wide receivers. And they've got a few more that they're targeting, going forward. Geographically, I mean, they've made a huge emphasis in state. We know that they have a handful of guys, especially from the St. Louis region, that have already committed. Part of that is during all the shutdown of recruiting, which today was extended another month. The dead period is now through July 31st, so no in-person recruiting for the next 2 months, basically. That works to Missouri's advantage for the guys that they've already kind of built relationships with, and those are the in-state players who got to see campus and got to meet these coaches in person before the coronavirus shut everything down. So that's why the bulk of their commitments have been from in-state guys. But they've made, and this is kind of interesting, they're making an emphasis geographically in Chicago and Denver. And those are two places that are not really hotbeds for college football. But the connection is from Columbia Regional Airport, they have direct flights to Chicago and to Denver. So those are places that this staff believes that they can get to. They're not the most fertile areas for Power Five recruits, but they believe they can sell the SEC in those markets where no other team can. So it'll be interesting to see if they do anything with that. But he's been off to a good start. They've got 9 commitments right now. The SEC average is right about there. So they're doing just fine.
All right. That's kind of our first bite at this. And now we'll kind of open it up for more of a roundtable discussion. This is great to see the questions the readers had for us. And more than a few people wanted to know, kind of along JT's line, how are we doing? But also, how have our jobs changed during this time? And have we had any kind of goofy quarantine stories we could pass along from the folks that we covered? I know you guys are talking to lots of people on the phone. Thank God people are picking up. I had the chance to talk with Tony La Russa a while back, who said that he has no tolerance for these replayed games. He can't stand to watch a game that he knows the outcome to. So that's not giving him any sort of comfort here, which I thought was pretty Tony La Russa. But do you guys have any kind of tales from quarantine, that sources you've talked to or players that you've caught up with, and how are they handling this? How are you guys handling it? How have your all's jobs changed here? Folks were curious about that. Let's start out with Hockman. Go ahead.
Well, until about last week, I had a beard that made me look like Forrest Gump jogging across the country. But I decided to shave that. And now I kind of look like Frodo from Lord of the Rings, actually. Or Robin Williams. I think the story that I thought was most interesting, talking about how athletes were affected by this, 2 St. Louis Blues players, their wives gave birth like right in mid-March, Tyler Bozak and Carl Gunnarsson. And I was able to talk to Gunnarsson on the phone about that. And it was really fascinating to hear about this, I guess you would say, like this huge moment in his life happening during the coronavirus, where family couldn't come in. His wife's family was supposed to fly in from another country. They couldn't come, and they have this brand new baby, but no one could come in the house. And it was just kind of a glimpse into the world that is, March, April, May of 2020.
Eric, you mentioned Colton Wong was kind of paying attention to just being on his feet. Can you explain that and kind of why that's been on his mind and why it's important?
Yeah, it's on. Yeah, he put it well. It's on the mind of a lot of players. So the notion, the idea is that, like, people have this image of spring training that are players coming out, going through their workouts and everything like that. But there's a lot of milling around, a lot of actually being on the field. Not as much, you know. There's moments of activity. It's kind of like baseball itself, right? Like kind of this sustained notion and then eruptions of activity. Well, one of the things about spring training, though, is that the players are constantly on their feet, just like they are in a game, whether they're chasing after a ground ball or chasing after a fly ball, whether they're in the box or not, they're on their feet, which is, you know, a center fielder may go 9 innings without ever having to catch a ball, but he's going to be on his feet for 3-4 hours as a result of it. And Colton put it probably most descriptively when he said, you know, you have to maintain that notion of being on your feet. You can't be, you know, you can't be sitting here doing sports on tap and zooming all the time, or can't surrender to Netflix and, you know, or just be on a bike and think that that's the activity. You have to be on your feet. So he actually set up like a weighted vest so that he could be in his house. And if he was going to, you know, catch up on Game of Thrones, or I shouldn't say that, because I don't know what TV show of all the players that I've talked to on the TV shows they're catching up on. I didn't catch what Colton is, but say they're catching up on TV shows. He's going to stand there with a weighted vest. You know, he's not alone in that. Other players have come up with different ways to do that as well. Walking around a lot, you know, Yadier Molina runs a lot, but the notion is that they can't just spend a couple hours working out on their feet. They have to spend 6-7 hours of the day on their feet.
What about you, Dave?
Are you on your feet, Dave?
What's that?
Are you on your feet?
I'm not right now. No.
We know he's drinking beer, so.
Well, I wanted to do this live from Lake of the Ozarks poolside, but I don't think that was in the
program. Come on, there's not enough Wi-Fi to go around there.
Wow.
Stick to sports matter.
What's that? That's right. What I found initially.
Thanks for keeping your shirt on, Dave.
And not so much now, because now the Mizzou is kind of ramping up the coaches and athletes are getting on campus June 8th for football and basketball. But in March and April, it was kind of nice to talk to coaches and some athletes, mostly coaches. They like to talk because they got to take a breath and they kind of got to I wouldn't say enjoy this, but find some kind of silver linings and just kind of have conversations. And Konzo Martin, I had multiple conversations with him. They start off as interviews. They kind of turned into conversations. And a lot of times he likes to talk while he takes his walks. He actually, we don't live in the same neighborhood per se, but he goes on really long walks. So he does get through my neighborhood. So I'll see him walking sometimes, but I've actually talked to him before when he's been on one of his walks. He walks fast. He doesn't run, but he walks fast. So he is panting half the interview. I think he's trying to find, you know, something to get out of this experience. And just the other day, I talked to Norm Stewart, who has been sort of, I wouldn't say trapped in Palm Springs, but he's been in Palm Springs because they couldn't come back to Columbia for the spring and summer like they normally do. And he and his wife, Virginia, even in their 80s, are super active people. And he said, you know, right now we can't be. And actually it's kind of nice because we're getting to reflect a little bit more. But he did say that he has learned how to Zoom, and he Zooms with his grandkids once a week. So if Norm Stewart at 85 can figure out technology during the pandemic, I think there's no excuse for all of us to. So that it has been kind of not nice, but it's been interesting, refreshing to kind of see the lighter side of people while they're just trying to get through this like the rest of us are.
JT, want to pitch it to you, but first I guess we're getting questions from readers who are asking about that the design of your curtain in the bathroom back there behind you. Is that sailboats or fish?
What are you talking about?
Behind you, over to your shoulder there. What's in the doorway?
Over which shoulder? This shoulder? That shoulder?
Up one. That one, yeah.
Up one? No, that's a closet. That's a closet. I'm in my office. The thing right here to the right there is like a rug from Afghanistan that one of my sons had made by some local Afghan people, and the local spelled Afghanistan wrong on there. So I don't know what that says, but I'll tell you what, a year ago, Memorial Day weekend, I'll never forget driving around my subdivision, past the subdivision pool, seeing all the locals have their little, you know, Memorial Day flags and whatnot out. And I was on my way to the Stanley Cup final in Boston. And I'm thinking, I'm going to cover hockey, basically at the start of summer. So this year, if I get in the car to, like, you know, to go to the grocery store, it's like a big adventure. I haven't been out a whole lot except to walk the dogs and ride the bicycle. I agree with Dave, though. It's harder to get interviews, and I'm curious about, especially Derek, because I mean, it's harder to get interviews of players and coaches and whatnot. But when you get them, you almost can't get them off the phone. I mean, in a locker room, if you get 5 minutes alone with a player, that's pretty good. And some of these guys, like, of course, these Where Are They Now are retired Blues players. Some of those interviews last like an hour. I'm like, yeah, okay, yeah, well, I got to go, you know, or something. The repairman's here or something. But so that's been good. But I think my favorite story of what a Blues person was doing was I talked to Berube. I got him on the phone. This was pretty early. This was maybe a month into the NHL's pause, and he's back at his permanent home outside Philadelphia with his girlfriend, her kids, his kids from, I guess, a previous marriage. So they literally kind of a Brady Bunch thing. But Berube was talking about how much he liked, what was it series called? Ozark or Ozarks? Ozark. How he watched that and how great it was, how he's grilling, how he's going on bike rides. Fellas, does this sound like the Craig Berube? We know the guy that's so uptight and so, you know, clenched jawed. I just had to laugh out loud picturing him in that kind of setting. Now, that was like mid-April. It's the end of May. Who knows what he's doing? He might be crocheting or something right now. I don't know.
Well, if we would have had Berube at the Lake of the Ozarks, they would not have said they didn't have they lacked an enforcement problem to deal with.
Yeah, he should have been the social distancing chairman.
One of the things that I think we should all kind of take turns weighing in on are you know, people want to know where do things stand in terms of all these sports that we covered attempts to come back. So let's kind of go around the horn, you know, from baseball to NHL to college sports on the big question. Some of them are going to overlap, right? But the topics, the timeline, the debate right now between baseball players and owners, I think people would get some value in trying to hear about that. So that's going to be our next kind of around the horn here. But wanted to remind folks, of course, that we're here thanks to Scotsman Coin and Jewelry. If you guys are cleaning the house, looking for things to get rid of during this time, a lot of people are using the ample time at home to go through things and get rid of stuff. You have old coins, jewelry, watches, sterling silver flatware, and you think it might be worth something, take it to Scotsman Coin and Jewelry in Creve Coeur. They have been doing this a long time and they'll take care of you. So thank you to them for letting us be able to do this. Hoxie, let's start with you, kind of whether, you know, you're covering all this. You got hockey, college sports, baseball. A lot of these people are talking about the same things. How do they make this safe? What are the procedures going to be in place? And also, what is going to be agreed upon between players and owners to get both of these sports that we cover here in St. Louis back? That's kind of a different angle for college sports because they don't really have a voice. We'll get into that. But what do you think? Where do you think about where things stand right now between baseball and hockey? Do you think we're going to see something get worked out here soon?
Yeah, I think we'll have games, Ben. It's kind of one of those situations where you can look at it and be like excited. Hooray, we will have sports. Thank goodness. We'll have sports back in our lives. And we can get romantic about it. We can get excited about it. And then we can look at it from this side and be like, wait, there's going to be humans physically interacting constantly a lot. Like the image of that and the thought of that can rub some people the wrong way. And of course, there's going to be many coronavirus tests daily in all these sports. I just filed a story for our paper tomorrow about the Blues and their upcoming season. And yes, there's going to be daily tests during the Blues playoffs. But the what if is scary because a lot of times we get caught up in the games. Like I'll never forget, like there was a football player who had major concussion issues, and there was a question whether or not he should play in the Super Bowl. And you know, before the Super Bowl, you're like, I don't know if he should be playing. Like one hit, he could, you know, be messed up forever. Then the game's happening, and he makes some great catch in the third quarter. And he gets hit hard. And you're like, what's one hit? You know, you're thinking about it differently. And I think it's the same it's not apples and apples, but you think about with the coronavirus, like right now, like we're like, oh my God, you have to be completely safe, hockey players, whatever you do. But like if it's the Western Conference Finals and guys are out there hitting, they're not going to be worrying at all about getting the coronavirus until someone gets the coronavirus, or until the entire power play gets the coronavirus. And suddenly we're talking about, it was obviously an accident, wasn't planned. And it's not about, oh, can the Blues handle themselves against Colorado Avalanche? It's, will Alexander Steen live? You know, I'm not trying to be so morbid, but like, that's kind of what we're dealing here with sports. As I said, to start off, we're all happy, like, yay, sports are back. And then on the other hand, it's like, at what cost? How safe are we going to be? And not everybody has the answer. Nobody has the answer. Dr. Fauci doesn't have the answer.
Seems like certain players, and this doesn't get talked about much, certain players are more at risk. You got a guy like Jordan Hicks, Derek, who has diabetes. He's maybe at a different risk than your average Joe baseball player. Health is one thing we hear a lot about the players want straight answers on. How many tests will there be? What's the process? But this other debate, which is really unappealing to a lot of Americans right now, understandably, is the money. You know, we've seen the owners now come back to the players with a formal proposal about they scrapped the idea of a revenue sharing, but they're asking them to take pretty significant pay cuts from what they thought they were going to have in a prorated portion of their salary, in addition to the highest paid players really taking the bulk of those cuts. This is not perceived to be received well by the players. We're seeing some negotiations in public here continue. Where do you think this stands in terms of both the money and the health when it comes to baseball?
I think there's significant issues on both sides after talking with folks today and yesterday as that proposal kind of reached the players' union from the owners and started making its way around. There's a lot of frustration and disappointment from that proposal. And then there's also a recognition that it's just a proposal, and now it's the players' turn to come back with what they'd like to see. You know, it's not unusual for negotiations to start with one side reaching for something it knows it cannot get in an attempt to set the bar higher so that the agreement is more towards their side of the spectrum. There may be some of that in play here. The owners have the edge. Ben, and as you and I have talked about on the podcast a little bit, the owners always have the edge because they serve. You know, they're the one who puts it forward first. And so it can look like yesterday they are having a proposal to return to play. And any rejection of that or counter to that, they can position it as, oh, the players are against our proposal to play. We're the good guys. We want to play. And the players are the guys who are critical of that. The players are playing from behind in that. But I think we've seen over the last 24 hours here, especially with Andrew Miller being involved in it, a better message from the players. One that says, look, we have health concerns and financial concerns. We have questions about what this means, but we also have energy and enthusiasm and urgency to come to an agreement. I spoke to him today, and that was what he said. He said, there are significant hurdles to get over, but I still see a pathway for a 2020 season. That's not something that you got immediately yesterday, especially with like Marcus Stroman saying that he was discouraged about the chance of a season. So where things stand right now are the clock's ticking on negotiations. The owners reached, and now the players will counterpunch. I saw something where, you know, the fans were critical because there are so much unemployment, and there is. Every industry has been shook by this, including ours. The newspaper industry, the news media industry has been, you know, quaked by this really to its core. But this notion that the players haven't taken a pay cut is wrong. The players have already taken a pay cut. They have agreed to a prorated pay cut, which now with an 82-game schedule would mean half their salary. All that's really guaranteed is the signing bonuses that they got. So in effect, to put it in terms that we can kind of all relate to, you know, baseball players have been furloughed for the past 2 months. That's essentially what's happened. They've got their benefits. They've been able to draw down on an initial payment from the owners, but they have been on furlough for 2 months. And as of Sunday, the payments stop. And some teams may stop minor league payments. The A's reportedly will. There have been some players released, minor league players released from teams who don't want to pay them. So May 31st is a big date because that's drop dead. And so players have already taken a hit here, and now they're being asked to kind of take a leap of faith, not only for their health, but also that the owners will come through with the revenue.
Yeah, the difference between players at the professional level and players at the college level is the college players don't have a union or a body that represents them. We don't usually hear, Dave, from college athletes unless it's an individual. There's not a group because they're not classified as employees. What do you think that is being done? What are schools saying about what's being done for college players? And what do you make of the SEC saying, hey, we're going to leave our testing protocols as schools welcome players back up to each program? We've already seen some differences between what Mizzou says it's going to do and what a school like, you know, Florida or South Carolina might do. How are you seeing SEC programs handle this differently? And what do you make of kind of each school being left to decide what works for each program?
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, as we know, June 8th, football players are allowed to come back to campus for voluntary summer workouts. They're only voluntary if you don't want to play this year. But they'll come back. Missouri's going to bring them all back at the same time. Other places are going to kind of stagger their athletes back. And there's basically two camps. Now, there's this SEC task force. Every school has one doctor. It all got together, 14 doctors. They came up with this list of guidelines. Now, nobody's mandated to follow them, but this is the recommendations they're making in terms of monitoring their health, social distancing in the weight room, all of these things, protocols for what to do, you know, if someone would test positive or show symptoms. But they're leaving one major thing that they've left up to the schools is really they've left everything up, but there's no specific guideline or mandate that they have to test these athletes for COVID-19. So there's basically two camps. There's the schools that have already come out and said, we're mandating all of our athletes will have to be tested before they can, you know, go in the weight room and do anything around their other athletes. Other schools, Missouri included, will only test athletes who are either symptomatic or are coming from a hotspot regionally around the country. And Missouri's not alone. Arkansas announced today they're going to do it the same way. LSU is going to do it the same way. The other camp at Florida, Georgia, I think South Carolina, other schools, they've kind of announced these very vague policies. A lot of this is just being made up on the fly at this point. So there's ground. I've talked to people who believe in both sides. I've talked to some people in the medical field that say you can bring everybody in and you can 120 football players, $100 a pop for these tests. On top of that, you got to pay for a lot of gear and equipment for the people administering the test. You could have 120 negatives and the next, and that's what 120 times 100. That's that $12,000 for one day of test. The very next day, somebody could go to the grocery store or go to the bar or whatever and get the coronavirus and pass along to everybody. And all those tests were worthless. So that's kind of how they're looking at it. There is a financial stake here. That some schools just aren't going to make. Instead, they're going to go with really vigilant monitoring and testing. So if anybody shows any sign of a symptom, they're going to be quarantined. I don't think there's any doubt about that. They actually have had athletes all summer long have been allowed to use their facilities, the ones who have been trained coming off injuries and rehabbing. And from what I've been told, there's been some kids that have come through the weight room that have had allergy symptoms and they kicked them out for the day and said, sorry, that's just, you can't be here today, or even low grade fevers. So I think they'll be super careful about this. Nobody wants anyone positive and nobody wants a lawsuit, but it is interesting that some schools are going to test and some have decided they're just going to do it on more of a case by case basis.
A lot of people are curious about the Blues, JT, and their chance to not only come back this season, but maybe a chance to host as one of these so-called hub cities. But we've got the news, the Blues, why were the Blues cut out when a city like Chicago could get a chance to host? And also just in general, don't the Blues have the most to lose of any team if there's not some sort of a postseason that comes through? I mean, they're first in the West with a chance to be a number one seed here. Are they the team that's going to get shorted the most if they don't get a chance to defend their championship?
Yeah, of course. They won't get a chance to defend, and they had a very good chance and maybe still do to make a long run. I'm not sure. I was in communication a little bit with Bill Daly today, the deputy commissioner of the NHL, and wasn't really too specific on why St. Louis didn't make the field of 10 for the host cities. I think the proximity of hotels close to Enterprise Center may have hurt him. maybe it's nothing more than the NHL just wants to spread these things around. It's although having 12 or 11 other teams come to St. Louis for a playoff is a prestigious thing for the city. It's not like economically you'd make as much money as, could you imagine if there were fans coming in to watch 11 out of town teams play various games, the financial impact, but maybe, you know, the St. Louis had the All-Star game this year, pulled it off greatly, did well in the, showed very well, I thought, in the Stanley Cup final as to how they hosted thing, although that's not something you bid on. You have to earn your way into the final. But even the Winter Classic went off without a hitch before I was on the beat in 16, 17. Maybe they just want to spread it around to some other cities. But, yeah, some of these cities that were picked were pretty strange. For one, and I'm writing about this for tomorrow, there are three Canadian cities. Well, right now, it's still a 14-day mandatory quarantine for players or anybody to cross the border into Canada. So what are they going to do? Okay, Toronto, you're a hub city. You're going to have to wait, though, 2 weeks before you can actually leave your hotel room. And Vegas, under normal circumstances, you'd say, yeah, Vegas. Yeah, great. Let's go to Vegas. But, you know, I've had a little more chance to follow the news here in self-quarantine. And the Vegas mayor can't wait to open up that city. Now, why is it a good idea to have, I guess it would be, let's see, 12 times, let's just say 25. What is that? 250, 300 players staying right on the strip. Now, are they going to be able, especially for weeks at a time, to keep all these players from, hey, Ben, let's go out and play some, just a little roulette. We won't be out. We won't intermingle. Or let's go walk the strip. That doesn't seem like a good idea to me. And Chicago, I know the numbers are going down there, but that was a COVID-19 hotspot, and that's a final. So it's a little bit weird how they've set that all up, but it's very clear the NHL wants to play. They seem very, I don't know if very close is the right way, but they're taking steps almost every day, and I think only some kind of setback in terms of the virus spreading in general, or if during the small group workouts, or if they get into training camp, if there are a bunch of players that test positive, I think that's the only thing that'll hold them back. The games will be interesting, though. Like, how many times do you see players spit out water and stuff? How are they going to break that habit? They don't want them, obviously, spitting on the ice or whatever. Line changes. Are you going to be socially distanced on the bench? How do you make a line change with that if you're stacked up in two or three rows? And there's also been talk about possibly they'll eliminate fighting. Well, that's not such a big thing, especially in the playoffs. But some people even said, well, maybe they're going to eliminate the checks and hitting. Well, I don't think that's going to happen. But that would really work against a team like the Blues. Just ask the San Jose Sharks, right?
Yeah, you're not supposed to bleed, I guess, either, or rush the mound as soon as that first Astros hitter gets plunked this year. I mean, some of these things are, I think, going to be more eye-watched as much as anything, but kind of maybe on a lighter note, but a similar topic, like what can be done to make these games, I guess, reminders of the fact that we got sports back, a celebration, as opposed to reminders that no one's there and that we're still dealing with this. I mean, that was one of the questions that one of our viewers wanted, is what do you guys want to see on these games, these broadcasts, to try to overcompensate for the fact that no one's there? Do you want to see the holograms in the stands? Do you want to hear the fake crowd noise? Or do you want to see something different? I mean, personally, I would like to see what they did. You know, I think we've learned something from this golf tournament between Tiger Woods and Tom Brady and those guys. Mic them up. I mean, we want to hear what these guys are saying. You have to put it in the hands of a trusty producer to not let things that they don't want out. But give us some color. Make us feel like we're on the field. Don't remind us of what we're missing. Have you guys thought at all about what you would want to see or hear on these broadcasts to make us feel like we're not just watching a game in an empty, eerie stadium?
Players mic'd up. You know, I mean, the baseball experimented with that during spring training, and it was one of the highlights of spring training, if you can remember, way back 2 months ago when there was actually games. But having Freddie Freeman rightly call what pitch he was about to see and then hammering it, and then Anthony Rizzo and Chris Bryant going back and forth, I mean, that made for great television, and it made for compelling baseball too. It kind of revealed a little bit of the inner workings of the game that, you know, we get to see by talking to these guys, but TV audience has got to see in real time. I mean, it's remarkable to when you get some guys who are that comfortable, that confident, and that gregarious or that charismatic, you know, and let them take over. I know that like Pete Alonso, the first baseman for the Mets, he in Major League Baseball talked about putting a mic at first base this season, and then he promised that he would engage in conversation. Then they would go and get permission from the player and everything like that. But that he said, I'll take that on. I'll be more interactive. I'll strike up conversations with people just to give people that inside game. You know, Colton Wong has suggested that they take a playlist from players and that they actually play the playlist of the team that is leading, or to have that be part of the competition. He was trying to figure out exactly how it would work. But you know, if the team that was leading could show its momentum by having the songs it wanted play, that would show some of the personality. I think there's an open canvas there for creativity to take hold, but miking the players, man, that would significantly improve, particularly for baseball, what could be a real deliberate pace to games as the players learn new rules and new protocols.
Dave, do you think there's a chance we could get coordinators or coaches mic'd up for college games, or it's all too paranoid?
They are way too paranoid with all the precious terminology and play calling. Although they did it in the XFL, and well, I shouldn't say it worked there because nothing worked in the end. Yeah. But I think you could do it, or maybe just find like the really colorful, crazy linebackers coach or offensive line coach, put them on a 6-second delay and let them go, because they're not calling plays. They might be given, you know, some lingo here and there, but not giving away any state secrets. I think that would add a lot to a college football broadcast.
We're getting some more individual questions here from our – Go ahead, JT.
Oh, just saying in hockey, you'd have to have a delay, obviously, especially if you had Craig Berube mic'd up. And, you know, Pat Maroon looking over at the Boston Bruins bench, you guys are bleeped. We all remember that. I think that spawned a T-shirt. But, yeah, I think it would be great to be
– Are you wearing that T-shirt now, Jim?
Actually, this is a Fort Stewart, Georgia, where I have a daughter-in-law and a son are stationed there outside of outside of Savannah. So that's what that is. As for music, what do you think, Ben Hawk? Could they just play Glory after? No.
We don't know that. It's in the past.
We need to see some Eddie Murphy party all the time, right? That's supposed to be the new song, and we didn't really learn about this, or I didn't. It didn't become general knowledge until after the pause, so I guess we have to have this. I like, just as a quick aside, I know we've got to move this along, I liked how the lady that runs the Laura Branigan the music kind of panned the Eddie Murphy song. You know, she said like any sequel, it's, you know, it's usually not as good as the original. So
yeah, she actually made reference to the movie Another 48 Hours and compared that to the 48 Hours that was Gloria.
That's right.
I think she's had her moment. Okay, she can go gracefully into the history books. I don't know that she needs to be criticizing other songs here. But you mentioned, Dave, the XFL, and I wanted to give this one to JT because, sadly, RIP.
Is there a Battle Hawk in your house here, Hawk, or what?
JT wrote the first article about the lawsuit, the relocation lawsuit, St. Louis versus the NFL, the NFL owners, the league, you know, everybody who has ever worked for the NFL, the people who are going to work for the NFL in the future, Roger Goodell's 18 future grandkids. Like, St. Louis and the county and the Dome Authority have sued everybody with the title of the league. This thing was laughed at when it first came out, but it's continued to kind of stack up these little victories. We had a viewer who wanted to know, you know, how do you think this is trending? And do you think the end result of it could be St. Louis one day getting an NFL team back? Now, I've got thoughts on this, but what do you think as the guy who broke the news that this was going to happen, this lawsuit?
Are you talking to me?
Yes, sir.
Oh, okay. All right. So far, all of the procedural decisions have favored almost all of them, like 90% of them have favored St. Louis. But no, the result of this isn't going to be that the NFL awards St. Louis a team. That's That's not going to happen. And I will say, and Bill McClellan, the great Bill McClellan, the legendary Bill McClellan, wrote about this over the weekend. In these sorts of cases, and there hasn't been a whole lot of them, but there have been some, the NFL generally does much better in appellate court. But as for what happens in St. Louis, if it goes to trial, and, you know, if we have Kroenke, Roger Goodell, Jerry Jones, I mean, I'd buy a ticket for that. I'd pay $25 to get in. I think that would be great. Kevin
Demoff.
Would
you get a PSL for that? If the told you a PSL, would you?
The Rams would want you to buy a PSL for that, a personal seat license, giving you the right to buy a ticket to the trial. Yeah, no, I think St. Louis wins in the opening round. There's no doubt about it, and I expect it, and I haven't really followed it. Ben Fred, you followed it more than I have recently. I would say it would be a hefty financial award they should get.
I don't think
it in the opening round.
Yeah, I don't think it ends with the NFL team coming back. I don't think it should. I don't think St. Louis should give any sort of overture to the NFL in the future. I think you try to figure out why the relocation rules aren't used. And if you can get some money back that you lost in the, you know, attempt in vain to keep a team playing a rigged game, you do it. And hopefully change things for the better for the next city that gets taken advantage of. Will it get overturned? Perhaps. You know, and I love Bill McClellan. He's one of the best parts of my day. We got to go into the office of seeing Bill McClellan come through, and he's seen a lot of lawsuits. So respect to the point, you never try to stand up to these people, and they just keep doing the same thing. A lot of people said this wouldn't get this far, and here we are already with a chance for this not to be taken into arbitration in private. It's going to have to either get settled or play out in court, where a lot of people are going to have to answer questions under oath that they don't want to answer. And so I'm eager to see where that goes, and we'll see what how it ends. But I love that it's gotten to this point, and I love that it's starting to make some of these league owners sweat. A topic for hockey here. A couple people chimed in on the comments wanting to know where we stand on Keith Hernandez and the Cardinals Hall of Fame here. You wrote about it recently. I agreed with you. Why do you think there's this standoffishness between the Cardinals fan base and Keith Hernandez when it comes to voting him into the Cardinals Hall of Fame?
Yeah, so real quick for those watching, every year you can vote for people for the Hall of Fame and two go in. And Keith Hernandez, the former co-MVP of 1979 and six-time Gold Glove winner and 1982 world champion and great mustached man, top Mount Rushmore of 80s mustaches up there with Selleck and the boys, he has not gotten voted in. And statistically, and, you know, we love Tommy Herr. Throw a seat cushion. We love Tommy Herr. And John Tudor's 1985 was phenomenal. But if you go by the statistic war, wins above replacement that so many people use, Herr has 19.1. Tudor had 19.9 in their careers for the Cardinals. Hernandez had 34.4, I believe. I mean, just he accomplished so much more for St. Louis. And, of course, there was the drug thing, and that, I mean, they traded a superstar Keith Hernandez for Neil Allen because they just wanted to get him out of town. And that was in 1983. And even Whitey Herzog himself, the man who had to make the trade, has mended fences with Keith Hernandez. And Whitey himself says Keith Hernandez deserves to be in the Hall of Fame. But another year has passed, and next year new guys will be on the ballot, and we'll have to see if a deserving guy ever gets in the Hall of Fame of the Cardinals.
I hear from a lot of people who are frustrated Keith didn't get in, and my only suggestion to them is to vote, because if enough people are mad he didn't get in, then they have the opportunity to change that through the fan vote. Derek, if you want to weigh in on Keith, I wanted to give you that opportunity, but also a question for you was a topic that was, I guess, has been one of the biggest in Cardinals discussion during this quarantine period is Yadier Molina and the comments that he made recently regarding his contract. How do you see this playing out with Yadi under the backdrop of the current financial setting of baseball right now? And where do you think this goes for him?
Yeah, no clue. I think it's more precarious than it's ever been. I think in spring training, it all seemed like a prelude to an extension that either would have greeted him early in this season or at some point right around now, both parties would agree to it and move forward, you know, or at least get to a point where they could. There is that tricky little rule where a guy has to become a free agent before signing for less than what he made. So it would have, the official signing would have been protected a little bit, but you would have had something in place where, you know, the Cardinals and Yadier Molina would be encouraged by where things were headed, or would have come to an agreement and then have to wait for him to become a free agent so he could make less, or sign a contract for less. But, you know, where things stand now, I mean, we don't know where the payroll is going to be for the Cardinals in 2021, because you don't know if they will have played a single game in 2020. That's one of the things that, like, is really kind of lost in this pause, is the NBA had part of its season. They had gate receipts. They had some revenue. The NHL, Jim, how far into the season did they get? They got to the brink of the playoffs. So not all 82 games, but they got, you know, three quarters or more.
Yeah, 85% of the season.
Yeah. So they have gate receipts from 85% of the season. Now they don't have their big ticket, you know, deals, their big ticket revenue in the playoffs, which are just, you know, they can be windfalls for some teams. But baseball had net zero from the 2020 championship season. And so baseball's coming at this from a different point, and baseball is really leveraged too on revenue from rights holders and from ticket fees. So we don't know where the contracts are going to go. It's really interesting, you know, that like people will rightly clamor that teams should do the right thing by their minor leaguers. But if that's $1 million or $1.5 million to support the minor leaguers at this time, that they then don't have to put on a payroll next year, no one wants to hear that. And I get that. Fans don't want to hear that. But you just have no clue where this path is going to take them as far as what a payroll looks like next year, especially because the market is going to change, but arbitration may not. And there's a guy named Jack Flaherty who, if they give a full season of service time to, is going to have arbitration rights and will have last year as his platform year and will be due a raise with a team that wants to shrink payroll. It's really fascinating. I do think that, you know, the market that Molina finds for himself outside St. Louis is going to be just as restrained and constrained as the one within St. Louis. So the pressures are still there to push the two together. But I think it's more in doubt than it probably ought to be.
I think the same thing about Alex Pietrangelo to some degree, the cost of leaving and what you would have to make that make sense in your head. Compared to what's going to be out there in this financial setting, it might be harder to find an offer that pulls you away from what you know. I wonder if that is the similar thing with Yadi, although pride is a powerful thing for Mr. Molina. And if he feels it's been slighted, then we know how he usually responds to that. Dave, we had a viewer, Elliot, who's going to be a freshman at Mizzou next season. He wants to know which team he should be most excited about. Now, let's give Elliot some optimism and say everything's going to go off as normal and there will be a college football season, but I don't think it has to be football or basketball. What team do you think right now is the one that has the most positive momentum going at Mizzou?
Well, anytime you have a new coaching staff in a major sport like they do in football, there's enthusiasm, there's some energy there. Part of it is just natural with the head coach's personality with Eli Drinkwitz. I think he's done a really good job of trying to revive the fan base, revive the high schools around the state. There's an energy there. Now, unfortunately, you know, they kind of unplugged all of that with shutting down sports and everything. The only way you can really consume the team for the last 2 months is, you know, online on social media. But once things get up and running, and assuming they will, I'm not predicting that they're going to be a great team. I think 6-7 wins. I wouldn't say that's a ceiling, but I think there's a reasonable expectation. But I do think that will be an exciting season, exciting team, just because you're going to have a new quarterback. You're going to have a new offense. And you're going to have a defense coming back that, you know, brings some solid pieces back from a top 15 national unit. So that is kind of the obvious choice. You know, basketball, it's a really pivotal year for men's basketball. I mean, they've been under 500 the last two seasons. This is Gonzo Martin's fourth year. He's never been head coach anywhere longer than three seasons, so it's a little bit uncharted territory for him. If all these guys that have declared for the NBA draft are testing the NBA draft waters. We don't even know when the draft is going to take place. If they all come back to school, which is the expectation at this point, they will be the most experienced team in the SEC. That's not always a good thing. I mean, Kentucky has the least experienced team every year, and they seem to win it or finish second. That doesn't mean you're the most talented, but it'll be a very interesting, important season for basketball. I don't know if the expectations are going to be super high, but they kind of – the results have to be pretty good, I think, if this – if that regime is going to keep going. And then other teams, you know, I think baseball's got a chance to be really good next year. Nobody really talks about Mizzou baseball very much. They just don't generate a lot of excitement, even though they're in the best league in the country. They should have all the, some solid pieces coming back. Women's basketball had an awful year last year. It was really a transition year, but they've got some a bunch of transfers that are going to be eligible next year, including, and then they've got the freshmen that were good this year. So I, coming off of what might be the most disappointing Mizzou sports season in a long time, I think they've got a chance to be relevant and much more interesting, exciting in 2021.
I wanted to mention our other college team we covered, the Billikens. A viewer asked about the new transfer, Hockman, you wrote about him recently, Okoro. This Billikens team is loaded coming back this season. Now, I'm assuming they're going to get Jordan Goodwin and Hassan French back. I don't think either of those guys have any business going into the NBA draft, especially one as uncertain as this one will be without a combine, without a chance to work out in person. If you return with what this team has coming back, now Okoro would sit out a season, but what do you think about him as an addition and also just where the Billikens could be entering this season for SLU Hoops?
When you look at Francis Okoro, you're talking about a basketball player that could have gone to most colleges in the United States coming out of high school. He went to Oregon, and it just didn't work out there, but that's to SLU's advantage. He won't play next season, and just how crazy is it to think that SLU could have the conference player of the year next season? But which one? It could be either guy. They have two guys that could be candidates. Excuse my voice for making it sound like I'm a fourth grader. But two guys that could be conference player of the year. And Goodwin and French, they both averaged double-doubles last season. Yuri Collins stepped up to be the starting point guard as a freshman. And there were turnovers, but he seemed to grow as the conference season began. And then there was that fellow Jacobs, who I believe shot 100% during conference play from the field, which was a record for the conference. That guy, it was just one of the most absurd stories I'd seen in a long time. Like, he was just a dude who averaged like 5-6 points per game in you know, the first 10 games. And then he was among the conference leaders in scoring in conference play. He'll be back next year too. As you can tell from my voice, I'm pretty excited to see if SLU can make it back to the tournament. And then, of course, once those two seniors leave, Francis Okoro comes in the following season and takes over.
I wanted to touch quickly on MLS for the Lou, too, because we had some folks who were curious. A lot of people, of course, want to know about the name. And when are we going to know the name? And I've waited until tonight to tell you guys what the name will be. I'm kidding. I don't know the name yet. But I can tell you that it's going to come after Charlotte announces its name. So I learned that this week. So the way that works is Charlotte is going to start its MLS expansion team in 2021, which they were named as an expansion candidate after St. Louis, but they get to play first. So they're going to announce their name, and then St. Louis, which will start in 2022, will announce after that. So once you see Charlotte announce, then you can kind of start the clock for finding out what the St. Louis name will be. So
if the Charlotte team says they're the FC Schilts, does that take the name that the St. Louis team planned to have?
Yeah, it was actually Schilt is going to be the sponsor on the chest. Actually he took his new contract and invested entirely in sponsoring the soccer team. But no, that would be something. That would be good branding for him. He could be on people's minds all the time, as if he's not already. That's probably, you know, an optimistic side of this, right? Schilt's extended honeymoon, if you will, during this quarantine time. But, you know, we got into the guys we cover, but the viewers also want to know about how things are going for us, which, I mean, I'll turn it over to you guys. We've pretty much exhausted the questions here. How are you guys holding up? And have there been any silver linings during this time? I know we're all eager to cover games. We're all to some degree stressed about the business of sports, like anyone with a tie to it is, but how are you guys holding up? And have you found some things to be positive during this crazy time we're in right now?
No, I mean, I'll just jump in.
No, nothing.
You know, the sports editor, Roger Henson, and I kind of joke about this. Like, on my laptop, I have this list of just, like, stories I've always been interested in and wanted to write. But, like, it's hard to do it when you've got real games coming that I need to opine about. You, Ben, and I, we jump all over. But with this downtime, there were a lot of stories in St. Louis sports that I always wanted to tell, never had a chance to, that I thus had the opportunity to. And a lot of us worked on that 1918 Spanish flu. I know Derek wrote a nice piece for that as well, about the Cardinal player died of the Spanish flu back then. So just getting to report on things that we clearly are probably wouldn't write about any other time has been kind of a silver lining from a journalism standpoint.
Those Spanish flu stories were great. Tom Timmerman, I think, wrote one too. That's great reading. And I you know, not to pat ourselves on the back too much, but I've been really impressed with our staff. Just the kind of stories that we've come up with, and they've been entertaining. They've been very readable, informative. And I think we've gotten very good reaction from the readers. And again, we're busy out, you know, chasing scores and chasing games and whatnot, but it's, and we don't normally have much of a chance to do stories like this. In that sense, it's been great. I mean, we've done it for what, 2.5 months. And I don't know if as many people are reading the sports pages and the sports on stltoday.com, if the Cardinals were playing baseball or the Blues were in a Stanley Cup run, but there's been some good quality content, and it's been fun to see, and a little different, challenging in different ways. I think we all maybe have to put a little more into getting the stories, at least from a beat writer perspective. Derek, you show up to some degree, you show up to the office, the ballpark or the rink, and everything's a little bit more formatted. Of course, you never know what's going to happen. And same with you, Dave. I mean, you show up to the practice field and you know, okay, I'm going to get this guy at this time and then this is going to happen. It's a lot more unpredictable now.
I do think readers have appreciated kind of the Where Are They Now stuff we've done, because there's a lot of news going on just in sports, the when question, when are things coming back? And then there's just a lot of news outside of sports. And a lot of it, I think, can just get exhausting. I mean, it's so much politics, so much back and forth that – and I sometimes kind of cringe when people say, oh, we like sports because it's a distraction, because it makes it what we do, it sort of implies that what we do is not important. But I think in this case, it is nice to hear that every once in a while, because not that we're ignoring the important questions, the important stories, but it does give us a chance to, like Hochman said, breathe a little bit and, think about the – for those of us have covered the teams that we've covered for a long time, or have just been in this market for a long time, we can flex our muscles a little bit on what we've done in the past. And I did that 30 for 30 list. That kind of took a life of its own. And it was on a whim, really, just to do something to keep Mike Smith happy, to put some stuff online on the website when there are no games to be played. And it became like most popular thing I've written at the paper. So that's just, I think people had an appetite for stuff like that. And it wasn't insulting to our jobs at the time. I think it was, we were doing it, what we're all doing right now outside of the covering the hard news. I think people have genuinely enjoyed.
Yeah. I've enjoyed that challenge of it, of trying to find stories, away from where people expect, to find the curveballs and changeups that are available. This would be 2 months into the season here, 2.5 months into the season. And, on the baseball beat, you meet with the manager twice a day, sometimes three times, depending on what's going on. I haven't talked to Schilt three times since we left spring training. He's been, as Ben mentioned, he's been away on sort of an extended honeymoon. But also the team has said, like, look, he's not the spokesman for us at this time. And it's been like almost freeing, to be honest, because it's like, all right, well, I can go tell other stories. I'd like to track down this former player. I'd like to talk to this current player. Today I spent 30 minutes on the phone with Nolan Gorman for a story in tomorrow's paper, part of this ongoing series about the future of the Cardinals. You know, like Jim mentioned, that's not necessarily something you'd get to do if the game was going on, but you know, it's something that we now have time to do. I had a chance to talk for a couple hours, I guess, in total with Paul Goldschmidt about books. I went back and looked, and there was one of the books we talked about had an element of baseball in it. And so it's just a different side of the job. Somebody asked what we were going to do with no sports, and I kind of pushed back and say, well, we're going to do our jobs. We're going to report. We're going to tell good stories. We have found, I hope, compelling stories that aren't set to a score. We've been freed of having a score in our stories for how long. So we have to actually have details and reporting to support them. I'm also pleased to say that this is the longest consecutive I've ever been home in my marriage or in the life of my son without leaving. So going back quite a ways, and they still both claim me. So I think that's going well. They know that I may not leave here for another while longer, and they still claim me. So,
well, it's wrecking my marriage, Derek.
Jim.
I believe my wife is on the return to play committee. And
Jim, isn't it weird? It's like I do get a hard time because like I want to move around. I want to like okay.
Yes. You know, I like, do. I do have
where
that.
Is my yeah. Marriott point?
Oh yeah.
You know, yeah.
I get. I walk around the neighborhood going well. You know, at least I can simulate waiting in line for TSA. I just muscle memory.
Derek has been diagnosed with Marriott point anxiety.
Yeah. That's a bad thing. Yeah.
Search for a vaccine for that.
I have a hankering for Skyline Chili, and my wife was kind enough to try to make it. It was really nice because she was like, you know, you may not go to Cincinnati this year or may not get on the road, but he can bring the Skyline Chili home. So,
Dave was, you know, last I talked to Dave, he was installing like 6 locks on his office door to keep his twins.
not enough.
Has shaved his head. He's just lost that much hair since he's been only working from home with no games.
Who's been able to get a haircut here? In the I haven't. You have?
I gave myself.
Wait, no, I gave my wife one, and she gave me this.
That's bold. Okay. That's impressive, Derek.
Yeah. Anybody else think that that Hockman looks like the guy playing Ulysses S. Grant in that miniseries? Anybody on the panel? I do.
Are you talking about Brad Pitt? Brad Pitt in the Ulysses S. Grant?
I don't think. I don't think he's. I don't think he's in that one. You might be.
He's great, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Now since he goes to now he's claiming Missouri State, Dave. What's up with that?
Right, yeah.
Mizzou lost his number or something.
No, like Mizzou doesn't give him the credits that I mean. They should just give him the degree. This was a big thing when I was in school there. How he was a few credits short,
right?
And they just they should just give him the degree.
Could you imagine like what he could be able to do in his first career if he had that degree?
Be oh amazing. My gosh, no kidding. I mean, look at where it's taken us.
Hey, I was on the 7.5-year plan, so stop it. For my degree. Dave, what are you sipping on there? I'm just curious.
It's a log boat. It's a local Columbia brew. I might have put myself on mute and poured a second one while somebody was talking earlier. So that was the Zoom strategy there. I'm a veteran of the Zoom stuff now, so you got to figure it out.
It's kind of like Michael Jordan, Dave, and not only do you have Michael Jordan's haircut, but it's like the Michael Jordan documentary where, because you would talk and you'd have a full glass of beer, and because they would cut the film up, then you had no beer, and then you talk again and you have full beer. So that's what you made me think
I just
of.
I thought Michael he had Jordan. A Thor glass. I was very impressed.
That'd be impressive. Yeah.
I was impressed. He was drinking from both the cans.
I need a cigar and a baseball bat.
He had the glass at the same time. Like he's double fisting, which I think that's impressive. We should have slapped the Scotsman coin and jewelry tag sticker on the beer. That would have been maybe for next time we can get a
product placement. Yeah,
absolutely. Well, guys, we should probably thank those sponsors once again. Scotsman Coin and Jewelry. We have Kenrick's Meats, Synergy Chiropractic Center, and Best Home Furnishings for making this possible here. I could hang out with you guys all night, but I suppose we're
at a distance.
Exactly. That's what I miss most about and not to sound too corny, seeing you guys, you know, in the press box, hanging out, watching the games. That's one of the part about this job that I think is the best. So we have all gotten better at Zoom. I can remember the first Mizzou one we did where none of the reporters could figure out how to like raise their hand to ask a question. And then they didn't realize you had to put it down. So they kept kind of getting called on again. Jim Stirk was like calling on people who like didn't have a question ready. It was very awkward, but we're all now very good at Zoom. And I think we managed to pull this off without too many snags. So thank you guys for being a part of it, for making some time this evening. It's great to see everybody's faces. And thanks most importantly to the viewers who wanted this to happen and who signed up and who most importantly subscribed. We've got some great subscribers going on at stltoday.com. If you like the coverage, if you want to see more, if you want to keep it coming, please consider an online subscription to help make things like this possible. I'll brag on us. We're one of the few papers around the country that are still putting out a daily sports section with as many local stories as we have. And that's been something that's been great. And it's awesome to pick up the paper every day and read our guys going at it. And I think it's really, really inspiring. So keep up the good work, boys. And thanks to everybody who tuned in. And hopefully
hey Ben,
we'll see you.
Real quick. Person. Ben.
Yes, sir.
Can we say happy second anniversary to you? Happy second anniversary to Ben.
Thank you.
Attaboy, yeah, Ben.
Yeah. Last time I was with JT in Boston for it. So, you know, who knows where we'll be in year three. Hopefully somewhere going on. My wife is very understanding. I think she's ready to have me get back out there too. So thank you very much, Derek. And thanks everybody for tuning in. We'll talk to you guys soon, hopefully in person. For Jim, for Dave, for Benjamin, for Derek, I'm Ben Fredrickson, and we'll see you next time.
You can find the video for Sports on Tap, along with all the podcasts hosted by some of the voices featured there, like Ben Fredrickson and Dave Matter on Mizzou, Jim Thomas and the hockey podcast that runs on STLtoday.com, along with the best podcast in baseball. Also, all of the coverage that has continued over the past 9-10 weeks without games being played is available there at STLtoday.com. I'm working through a series of 8 stories looking at the future at each position for the Cardinals. There will also be more news coverage coming, obviously, from MLB as they continue to negotiate with the Players Union for a return to the field and a start, possibly, of the 2020 regular season. You can find the best podcast in baseball wherever you get your podcasts. That includes iTunes, where you can listen to individual episodes, download individual episodes. You can also subscribe to the podcast. It's subscriptions that make the sponsorships possible, and it's sponsorships that make the weekly podcast possible. You can also rate and review the podcast there. I do pay attention. I do frequently swing by iTunes just to check the reviews and see how the podcast is being received, because this podcast does not exist without the community of subscribers listening to it and giving me feedback. The best podcast in baseball is brought to you by Closet by Design in St. Louis. Update your closet, garage, office, pantry, and more. Call 1-800-BY-DESIGN. That's 1-800-BYDESIGN. Closet by Design of St. Louis, your sponsor for the best podcast in baseball. The BPIB will return with a prospect conversation in the near future, so stay tuned for that. For Sports on Tap at home and all of my colleagues at the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, I'm baseball writer Derek Gould. Thank you for listening. Talk to you soon. Stay healthy.
I've already disappointed somebody. Somebody said I was supposed to wear a comic book shirt.
Man.
Derek, is there a chat or something you're looking at?
No. It's a text message from a friend.
Oh, a text message. Okay.